Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. I should be back. There I am. The rest of me. Fuck. Oh, excuse me. yes, making a video. Alright, so I thought I would go over the elements of the argument. You know, just trying to get to the place where I can put all the elements together in some sort of arrangement that is decidingly compelling to any being who can process facts and information in a clinical, you know, ordered, strict kind of way, where you're not allowed to just make up, you know, fairy tales and, you know, fudge the facts. And all that crap. And so, I wrote a list. yeah. For my own use. Sorry. So I did throw biology and evolution at the top because that's sort of an important feature. You really have to get to the part where you talk about how the universe works and that it, you know, the fact that we have intelligence is really profoundly incidental to the actual function of, you know, making organisms, and that it's not a likely outcome just because the intelligence isn't of any value to monsters, and that's basically what the evolutionary process is make a gladiator, right? Gladiators aren't very smart. you know, they're just crush, kill, destroy types, you know, spend a lot of time in the gym kind of thing, you know. Yeah, it's not likely to be a feature. You don't need a lot of intelligence to be very effective at, you know, defeating the adversary, generally speaking. So it's not an evolutionary advantage, you would argue, because it creates, you could argue, a lot of inhibition about even being a monster. Intelligence is going to make you question the game you're playing, you know. So smart people can't play tic-tac-toe, for example, because they know it's fixed. So there's a rig to it, you know. So some games are just unplayable because they know it just depends on who goes first. And, you know, game over. So there's no game. That kind of thing. So you can make lots of arguments about the fact that, you know, we're smart by accident. Okay, we're capable of being smart, I should say, because we're not behaving very intelligently, frankly, as a kind, as a collective. We're not doing very smart things. But the bigger question to resolve with a set of facts is that there's no reason to believe the intelligence exists beneath us, you know, that there's any intelligence innately built into the universe, that it knows the difference between good and bad, or nice and nasty, or, you know, any of that, because it doesn't have any, it hasn't placed in a model somewhere, a construction that does an algorithm. There's no program that analyzes the value of torture, sentient feelings, and what it means to impose upon them. So I suppose this also combines, it kind of just so close to the other argument of just the very fact that if you were to assess the universe, the only place you can find reason to say it matters or it's important or it's necessary or it's vital or it's urgent is the case where the welfare of a feeling organism is at jeopardy. And if something's going to happen and it will not affect any feeling creature ever, you could argue that it just doesn't matter how it turns out. If it's not going to make anything in the universe, you know, it's not going to prevent it from being harmed, I would argue is the most important part of that. or it's not going to derive an enhancement of its comfort, there really couldn't be any significance to the outcome. And so it's just figuring out whether there you can find some tangential connection, some any kind of connection to an outcome that affects feeling things. And that's unfortunately everything because of this kind of butterfly effect, this idea that all these events are kind of tied to each other. It is a multiplayer game. I can't interact in the world without affecting what other people have to interact with. We all create the wind that blows other people's lives to pieces, kind of thing. So there's no way to subtract any event from some potential to have an impact on what happens to human beings. You could say it's pretty unlikely that, you know, I could find a book in some obscure library somewhere and I could change one of the letter A's into a letter O. And we might all agree, you know, and just close the book back on the shelf. We'd probably agree that that can't possibly cause any damage. You know, it can't really possibly have an effect where it changes anything regarding the outcome of the rest of the story, you know, the future. But there are an awful lot of other things where you could, you know, it's uncertain. And that's part of understanding our dilemma, is that we can't have complete certainty. You know, there's only us to drive the bus, and unfortunately it's really foggy, you know, and, you know, it's not an easy task, because it's really hard to control. The gas pedal doesn't work right, the steering is sloppy. I mean, the whole thing is really difficult, because we're not given perfect vision. But I guess I would point out that it is clear that in some places it's flat land and there's no trees and there's no cliffs, and you know, so there are places to turn where you're less likely to get into trouble. And I guess that's what can be argued, is that we should be driving towards that minimum safe choice rather than the high risk. Maybe there's some kind of reward in it, you know, kind of thing. It should be safety first kind of attitude. First, do no harm should be the right decision. So that's a whole debatable part of the subject, is, you know, what's the agenda? Is it just to get the bus to the other side, or is there some obligation to get it there, preserving some kind of, you know, cargo of human perception? Like, does the universe really need it and all of that crap? So that is a whole nother subject. A whole nother part of the conversation is about what's real and what's an abstraction in terms of what we intelligently understand. And the fact is, I would argue that the suffering is real. Whether it's necessary or unnecessary is sort of the more difficult part, you know, in placing an overlay over the fact that it exists. So I would argue that, yes, an intelligent argument can be made that none of it is necessary, because none of it satisfies, and there's no even indirect function that justifies its existence, that creates a counter weight to the negative weight of the negative circumstance, because the needs aren't needed. The only thing that generates a need for our existence is ourselves. Even the Martians, right? The Martians can't need to exist. We're the only ones who could need the Martians to exist. And the argument would be, why would we need that? I mean, would we need it for any good reason? Or would the need be just some selfish, some sort of personal, emotional problem? The need wouldn't be visceral or real. It would just be an illusion in the brain that, you know, is created by some sort of fetish, you know. So it's a completely mutable sense of necessity that doesn't arise naturally, let's say. It doesn't arise from intelligence. I mean, intelligence doesn't provide any reason to believe. And so it's really kind of junk, that the conditioned notion of a satisfactory universe, because it includes, you know, sentient beings, whatever, monsters, monstering. And so again, it's kind of a critical thing that you really understand the difference between whatever a regular person thinks a human being is versus its real portrait, you know, as just a biological organism with these innate physical dependencies, you could call them, half programming, half, well, it's all programming, but you could argue that some of it is just biological necessity. The thing won't survive if it doesn't eat. And then some of it is the first layer of, you have to have a motivating mechanism. It has to want to do stuff. And so it has this mechanism that forces it to eat. You know, it creates the desire and the addiction. And you could argue that beyond the blue elemental addictions, we have a few more complicated ones that have been built out of a bunch of, you know, psychobabble and nonsense about accomplishment and ego and that kind of crap, feeling like you haven't failed. And so you could argue that, you know, there's a whole bunch of psychological baggage that people bring to their existence, and a sense of incompleteness and unfinishedness, and therefore I have to do it over and over and over again or something. Some notion that they will live on in the lives of others in some practical way and finish whatever it is they feel they didn't finish in the amount of time they exist. So, all right, then you have all the subjects that have to do with the improbabilities of being able to navigate a future where we have even more power to control the biology. So questions like, you know, what would happen if we did gain some power over death and aging? You know, and what kind of effect would that have on human psychology? And would there would it be necessary to have some sort of, you know, limitations placed on the reproductive rates and all of that kind of stuff? Because I guess some people would just spend all of their hundreds of years of existence making babies or something. You know, that would be their ambition, and how impractical that could be in terms of creating unsustainable population expansions. And then the conversation could be just about all of the AI kind of virtual synthetic existence, where we understand the obvious efficiency of not having to live in real houses and have real yards and have real societies and buildings and structures, and that we can create all that in a synthesized plug-in program and essentially run a whole city with an iPhone, you know, have the whole infrastructure, all the doorknobs and all the walls and all the buildings and all the doors and all the, have it all, okay, just in a program, and you don't have to build any real buildings or any real anything, and all you have to do is, you know, I guess the movie was called, what the hell was it called? Coma? You know, where they just, you know, you have all the people in just racks of people, or even the Matrix, you know, just in their little goo bubble, and, you know, so they don't need anything, you know, they don't need much infrastructure. You just plug their biology into a system that feeds it in an efficient manner, and the rest is all, you know, provided as electrical stimulation to the senses, and, you know, it doesn't take much computer to feed the whole system with an environment to live in. And so is that living? You know, wouldn't that just make us very contrived that we think rewriting these little three pig stories over and over again is somehow, you know, an accomplishment, to just keep doing a little different variation on the same Shakespeare play over and over and over again, all these little different brains, you know, all this struggle to get almost, well, to get absolutely nowhere. And would you do it for, you know, would there be good cause to do that if there wasn't this component of our existence that had something to do with doing something intelligent? I mean, would you really create a matrix for, you know, birds or something? You know, or, you know, wallabies. Yeah. Because, yeah, it's the bottom line is it's just a kind of samey, stupid, imperfect existence. And why duplicate that, or why synthesize that? So, yes, obviously we could improve it. You know, we could take the predators out, we could take the ticks out, we could take the liabilities out. But part of what, frankly, makes some people, what motivates people, is having the obstacles to have to jump over, and that's all the fun of it, is, you know, doing that. So that, you know, theoretically might be a dead end, because without something to challenge us, you know, we don't perform very well in terms of finding any euphoria or joy or happiness. It's escaping circumstances that are the most fun, you might argue. You know, but the part of that that's lost is that we would just be using our intelligence to play a little maze game, you know, to scheme our way through some contrived little obstacle to make us feel like we accomplished, and, you know, it's trivial and superficial, and so it isn't really doing our intelligence much of a honor to be put in the position of just navigating some simple life of success and failure, you know, just to make something feel accomplished. So that's not too, you know, those kind of conversations also maybe provide a little bit of humbling perspective regarding sort of what game you're playing. So this almost bangs into the other subject of talking about you know, the fact that you can live your life in the small game of, you know, just doing better than the Joneses next door or something, or, you know, the little emotional games you play with your ex-wife and your wife and your kids or some other kind of crap. You know, some, you know, whatever that is, game. You know, your mistresses, and you're balancing it all. You know, or you can understand that you're in a bigger game, you know, where it's not about you, it's about all the players in the game, You know, so you can make the game as big as your neighborhood, or you can make it as big as your city, or you can make it as big as your state, or you can make it as big as your nation, or you can make it as big as the world. And recognize that the biggest game is the game of life on Earth, and whether you're doing it a favor or shackling it into a slavery. And, you know, that's the real game, I would argue. And, you know, that it can be argued that all brains, all things capable of putting puzzles together and, you know, adding 2 + 2 and doing these calculations should, to some extent, be devoted to understanding they're playing a role in that big game. And that's the only game. You could argue that somebody could be in a video game right now, you know, playing their video game, and they could theoretically understand that the outcome of their game has more implication than they won the game personally. That they could understand that their game is part of a bunch of other game players, and that if this collective of game players doesn't do a certain thing, that certain outcomes will happen in the real world. And that they could understand that it is all connected, and that you can't separate yourself from that big picture. So, I mean, I made lots of arguments in the past about how, you know, all you have to do is change one relationship in the world, right? I just change who's married to who, you know. And when you do that, you theoretically change so many other relationships, right? Because if you change one relationship, the person who would have been married to that person is not now married to them, so they're married to somebody else, and the person they were married to is now married to somebody else, and it just goes on and on and on in terms of switching the chairs that everybody's sitting in. And that has a huge implication. So it's like you can't make a decision in your life without obviously directly affecting the people you interact with, but you're indirectly affecting a whole bunch of other people who would have interacted with the people you have affected. And that's a pretty substantial responsibility for a pretty meager intelligence. So, you know, what's the, you know, how does one justify having that much power and having so little instruction or capacity or knowledge regarding how to use that power in terms of being able to see all of those permutations and all of those potential outcomes? Potential, I guess, would be the key word, in the sense that we can understand, though, okay, that those potentials exist. And by understanding just that, you understand that, well, if the potential is I'm going to torture somebody because I went and, you know, bought a hot dog from 7-Eleven or something, then I don't want to play, okay? Why would I want to be interacting in a system where the levers are so, you know, you have hundreds of levers and they all don't have any labels, and the truth is the outcomes are catastrophic in some cases, and you're supposed to, you know, you're obligated to pull these levers, and you really don't know what kind of mess you're making. So every time you involve yourself in somebody else's life, you know, you've changed their destiny, and then you change the destiny of all the people they interact with, and so on and so on. And why would a sensible intelligence say, yeah, that's good enough? Yeah, no. Not good enough if you're paying a real price for it. It's not an amusement, okay? It's not trivial, and you know, can't really be defended. So I think I'll take a little break there and look at my notes. You know, and think about it. All right, back So, thinking about the idea of a prime directive for intelligence, right? So, if I can get somebody to accept that our intelligence is just a byproduct of biology and making machines, robots, and, you know, we are the version 2.0 times squared, you know, whatever, times the speed of light squared, that it's, but what's the primary function of anything you would say was intelligent? The primary function is to find broken and fix it. I mean, you can't find a better function or purpose for intelligent, you know, than to fix what's broken in a model. It's not just maze, you know, navigating. It's, you know, fixing the maze, you know, finding the flaw in the function and taking the flaws out. And so again, the flaw, the ability to see a flaw, is just the fact that you have to recognize something that has value and that it's in a condition that's negative versus positive. And that just has to do with realizing that sentience is the only value engine in the universe. There's no other mechanism besides the fact that you could create this thing called a negative feeling, a bad feeling, torture, suffering, that could be recognized as a flaw, an error, a mistake, a bad. You know, that would be the thing to correct, is to take all the unnecessary bad, you know, out of the system. It's as simple as an engineering thing, where you see a flaw in an engine design where the part wears out because it rubs against the other part, and you just figure out, well, if you put this little bit of Teflon on there, then it lasts a million years. And that's what brains do. That's the value of intelligence, is to find those the bits that are rubbing badly, that aren't working well, and grease them, you know, make it fit, make it work, produce this harmony, whatever the right word would be, perfect the function. And so, you know, I've analogized this to, you know, really being a smart person on Earth instantly just turns you into a janitor. You know, your life just becomes an experience, okay, where you open your eyes and see, okay, broken systems, broken, raising kids in poverty, for example, or some other kind of thing where it just has these low probabilities of a positive outcome, different things. You say, well, you have to do something about that. I mean, you have to create some sort of better maze for better, it's a bad engine design, because it creates all these bits that will just create friction and broken parts and make a mess. cause a lot of suffering and torture that's unnecessary. So, these probably aren't the best analogies, but anyway, the idea is you can understand that what's the function of intelligent is to find the efficient path. Okay, that might be the way to say it. You know, to calculate the efficient path for, you know, a navigator. And, I would argue that if, you know, taken to its conclusion, that intelligence will see there's no, the most efficient path is not to make the path walker, you know, it's not to turn the engine on. It's even easier to eliminate all the harm or the broken parts if you don't run the engine, because it just doesn't produce anything except broken parts. I mean, why turn it on if it isn't making anything but the potential for this negative outcome? And that's all there is. There's no positive outcome. And we can sort of know that by the fact that we're not weeping because there's no Martians. That the entire need that we feel or sense about our own conditions and the condition of life on Earth is just one built out of a cheat of association, a bias created by the fact that we're part of it. And that it's when you're taken away from that bias, all of a sudden it doesn't seem to make all that much sense that you create this potential for torture. And, all the negatives that go with how that's happens. And so I have written the word imposition, and then there's the word slavery and imprisonment, and that's sort of sandwiched, okay, between this, the idea that the need comes from us. The need isn't something observed in the universe. So the universe is not saying, turn the engine on. We need you to turn the engine on. There's some necessity to turn it on. There's nothing saying the key should be turned. So again, why would the intelligence waste a bunch of time giving you solutions to how to fix the thing that's running when the simple solution is not to let it start running? And certainly not perpetuate it if there's no need. If there's a simple solution that you just turn the key off and now you don't have any broken parts, why wouldn't you just turn the key off? So that sort of gets to the idea of that the simple answer is just to gracefully exit trying to apply intelligence to a circumstance that doesn't need it if it doesn't have you to fix. If it doesn't have your problems to fix, then there's nothing for intelligence to do. It doesn't. There's no need for it to be here to manage a universe where there's no sentience. So if you did create an AI, right, what would it have to do? If I put an artificial intelligence in a universe that doesn't have any feeling things in it to worry about, so nothing's going to be harmed, okay, so there's no harm to mitigate, there's no negative outcome, what would it waste its time doing? I mean, and wouldn't it just be a waste of, neural function? So if the argument could be made that the only thing that creates any harm, okay, is the fact that the artificial intelligence has a little frog inside of it, and when it has to do a lot of thinking and computating about what to do and how to fix something, it squishes the frog. So the frog is harmed, okay, because the AI has to think about fixing something. Wouldn't it be kind of obvious that you don't fix anything because nothing's broken, so it would do nothing and it would never think and it would never, because there's no reason to hurt the frog. There would be no value to be gained, so there'd be no reason to apply intelligence to the universe because there'd be nothing better than a frog at stake. So, and that's the human condition, is the value is inside of us and the other feeling organisms, and the only way negative value can exist is through us manifesting it, through the suffering we impose on each other. And so that's another part of the key thing, is that, for an intelligent being, there's some realization that it's not just about them, and that there is a real concept of being an exploitant or being a slave owner or abusing or usury, some idea that you don't want to extract your protection from somebody else's exposure. So you don't want to burn somebody else to stop you from getting burned, because intelligence knows there's no difference between that other tortured brain or your tortured brain. You can't gain any immunity by moving the suffering to somebody else's condition. That's not intelligent to think that works. The whole idea of, living your life and saying, well, life is okay. Well, it's okay for you. Is it okay for the other people who've been forced to play? This is kind of a simple ethics argument that clearly there's plenty of people who will testify, including myself, that I don't want to wake up here again. Okay, I don't want to play. That I understand that the fact is it's going to be a lot more bad than good, and playing this out over and over again, and this whole live, struggle, die syndrome. I have no interest, in relearning the same lessons all over again and falling into the same traps and, having my parts ripped off and my guts, blah, 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 spilled and all of that crap. And I'm just a slave to whatever it is your ambition is in terms of perpetuating and keep playing the game. And you're just enslaving me and all the other people who would tell you, please, don't involve me, okay? Leave me out of it. And you will refuse to do that because you'll say, I can't leave you out of it. So I'm going to force you just because I can't. So this sort of gets to the consent argument where you can't get consent from the people you create. And so because you can't get it, you claim, I don't have to have it. Where that's not intelligent. I mean, come on, you can't defend that logically. The fact that you can't get it doesn't change the urgency and necessity of it as an ethical circumstance. You're just not allowed to tell other people they have to buy your lottery tickets. Because you want to buy lottery tickets, they have to buy one. I mean, it's like we had a government law that said, well, because the majority says you have to own a lottery, you have to buy lottery tickets, you're obligated to buy lottery tickets. I mean, that would be kind of obnoxious. Most people would say, yeah, okay, that's kind of well, let's not say most people. So it's probably not a good analogy. We should really talk about doing some other kind of stupid thing, like eating potato chips or whatever. well, that's not a great example either. But you get my point. Investing in, it's like forcing people to drink alcohol or something because you do it. It's obnoxious, when it's clearly not a sensible thing. It's not derived out of some sort of intelligence that says this is a great idea. So that's a big subject. I mean, that simple recognition. I mean, the idea of enslaving somebody should be obnoxious to most all people. I shouldn't have to explain why it really sucks to be a slave owner. It really sucks to use somebody else, use them as a shield, in navigating your life, letting them eat the bullets. It's such an abuse of power, and the very fact that you can do it doesn't mean you have a right to do it, kind of thing. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard to explain to a person that just because you can do something doesn't mean you can, it makes any sense or there's any justice or rightness in doing it. And obviously, like I said, enslaving people to your delusions of some accomplishment because you're going to quantum entangle with the future people and somehow continue to live or some whatever it is, whatever the delusion is that gives you some sense of purpose. And I would argue that for most people, they're not even thinking about any of that. And they're just thinking about some kind of little silly thing like, oh, you want to see what it looks like. Let's make a baby so we can just see what it looks like. I mean, some kind of stupid thing like that. And they haven't even considered all of the liabilities. What if it's born, without legs? What if? Have they really considered, are they really prepared to be able to construct or fix those kind of problems? Are they really going to invest the big part of their life that it's going to take to make it okay that they made this decision and it didn't come out well? It's a pretty simple argument to say that no, they're really not prepared for any of that. They haven't prepared physically or even psychologically to deal with any of that. And, those are just, So those are arguments that you would, I guess I would say that I would expect more people to be aware of, but I guess their religion prevents them from doing it, I suppose. I mean, everybody universally should be able to accept things like, well, look, if you don't even have, you know, you don't have enough money to feed yourself, you shouldn't be making babies. I mean, that's just too stupid. I mean, that's a real low probability of a good outcome. And just the idea that we should use whatever mechanisms we can use to ensure that you're, you know, that you don't have a kid with no legs, you know. And, yeah, so this gets into an argument about, well, God wants you people to be born with no legs because we're all supposed to benefit from their existence somehow and blah, 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 blah. Some kind of irrational excuse making for perpetrating a pretty substantial crime, you know, against a living thing in terms of you'll allow it to exist in a very compromised and difficult and uncomfortable way, so you can live your better life. And again, that's just vulgar. It's so rude. Yeah, okay. Time for another break, I think. And such. Alright, should be back. So, I was thinking about the fact that we're just biological robots, right? So you could first say there's no God, there's no bigger story than biological infestation on Earth. The biological infestites, okay, compete with each other. This version of robot becomes kind of dominant, mainly because it acquires this abstraction of, you know, being able to play more complicated games than simple monster games. It can devote its sentience and its intelligence to trying to play a higher game of conversation and argument and logic and let's add up all those pieces, let's build the maze, let's, you know, construct our existence, let's do something with our lives. But then that gets into this, you know, how do we do that as robots? And we do it because we're programmed by an environment, you know, where you're born, you know, who your parents are, who your teachers are, who the people are, your friends are, all of these little subtle interactions that have something to do with whether you're going to be an intelligence that acquires knowledge and information and then spends time writing it on a piece of paper and trying to figure out, you know, write the word me and then write all thems and then try to figure out what your context is, what your life means and what your existence is and what you should be doing with it. You know, should I go golfing today or, you know, should I work at the homeless shelter? You know, and, you know, balancing your personal emotional needs, your physical needs, your biological needs, against, you know, the agenda that you could obligate yourself to be a productive and useful and all of that crap, and, you know, whether to step a little harder on the gas pedal or to let loose on the, you know, take it easy and play it safe, you know, and when you're going to have all of those thoughts. And again, all of that's kind of robotic and kind of just dependent on how you grew up, whether you're risk averse and whether you're not risk averse, whether you acquired, you know, the contemplative time in front of maybe a campfire, you know, to think about the, you know, how fragile all of this existence is and how everything could just blow up tomorrow and everything, all kinds of horrors can happen and, you know, your parents can get killed going to the grocery store, all kinds of shit, and how aware you are of that and how much that plays on you, and all these little psychological games where, you know, you'll sell food that you won't eat, you know, that guy, you have a snake oil, a suggestion, a recommendation, but you wouldn't want to live it. You know, you'll create therapies for other people, but you wouldn't subject yourself to the therapy. That kind of crap. I'll fix your problems. But because I'll never have your problems, I'll fix them in a way I would find totally unusable or unsuitable. Because I think I'm better and I'm immune. And so, you know. So you can find lots of crass in it. So I have the word fairness in here because it's part of understanding how our brains are fundamentally unfair and how we are selfish organisms and you just can't deny it. And we're always scheming for our own interest in every, almost every adventure requires some sense of making my interest some kind of bigger interest. So I've sort of explained this with the idea of jumping on a grenade, that I think most intelligent people could do the mathematics and say, okay, yes, of course I should jump on the grenade. If I can spare 7 people from getting blown to bits, then yeah, I should. Okay, now obviously I could argue there's a more complex overlayer to that in the sense that, yes, if you're thinking about the long-term interest of the human race, maybe it's not a good idea to save anybody. So no reason to step on the grenade. It might be best to just shoot everybody on your side because the other side should win the war anyway. Something like that. So, yeah, you take that condition out of the argument. But it's just this idea of doing anything prescriptive for, the benefit of humanity. It's always something you have to turn it somehow into what's in it for me. So you have to create guilt, or you have to create honor, or you have to create some kind of thing, like you're going to collect badges. You have to make it into some sort of bullshit, okay, that satisfies this, ape that exists inside of you still, this more primitive monster that, has a hard time doing anything other than managing its own comfort. It finds it difficult to solve problems abstractly for others that where somehow it's not in the maze. It becomes a boring game if they don't get to play, that kind of thing. If everybody else has controllers and everybody else is playing and, your role, you don't get anything out of it, it's not nearly as fun, okay, as when you get to pull the levers and get something rewarded for your efforts. And how that's just another reason to know that this is a dangerous game we're playing because of how corrupt we are, and that every inch you give us, every bit of latitude you give us to wallow in our delusions and our grandiose notions of self, that nothing good will come of that. And that would be the whole, I would argue, the anti-argument against the graceful exit is just that, just emotional mush, where, they're forcing a dead person to be alive. They're just prolonging and wasting and squandering the value of suffering by finding some lame and silly reasons to cling to some notion of purpose and function that just doesn't exist. It's dead. Okay, it doesn't do anything. We're robots. We're really not doing anything valuable. We're just pantomiming. We're just dancing, and it's a bad dance. I sort of said it that way before, so it's not a terrible analogy. All right, so the word comes in here a couple of times, the word need and necessity, and so I guess that's just another, like I said, all of the need is just a projection of a human somehow associating the existence of humanity with some element of their own success or failure as an entity. So somehow it's a concession to failure to say, don't make any more of these things. Somehow that's an insult. And, they take it as something they have to fight against and fight back against and say, no, I'm a pretty bird, I'm a pretty bird. you know, and you, because you won't accept being described as what you actually are. You know, so it's just ego and, you know, notions of ambition and accomplishment that are reflexes of a kind of, you know, the primitive components that exist in the algorithm that is a human being. Its intelligence is substantially corruptible by selfish motivations. And it's a legitimate part of the conversation. So I have here at the bottom, intelligence, what the hell is that word? It tries not to make sloppy mistakes. And it's a sloppy mistake not to recognize your selfish, subjective narrative polluting the gameplay in the big story, okay, the big game. And you keep trying to find your way through it in, like I said, just grotesquely subjective ways where you think blue is a better color, so you try to make the future more blue. And you know it's doesn't have anything to do with anything intelligent, it just has to do with your personal preferences about how you like to think about things being. So much of this has to be tried. It's a legitimate for somebody to point to somebody else and say, you're just talking out of your fantasies. You're just talking out of your wishful thinking and hope. You're not talking out of what you think is realistic, what you know to be realistic. That you're gilding the lily, you're fudging the real swords. You're pretending they're made out of rubber, you know, some kind of bullshit to escape accountability for the real circumstance you're creating, you know, which is shoving a little kid out on a tightrope, over a huge pile of dramatic and horrible potential outcomes. And for no real purpose, but for you to catch them on the other side and hug them and say, look, you did it. I mean, it's your gratification on both ends is the only thing playing, and you barely care about the kid. You only care about the kid in that it's a means to you gaining some gratification that you lived a productive life because you made another human being who's going to be doing stuff in the world, and, you know, some sort of notion of your own ego. And that makes it even so much more crass that people really don't even, you know, they claim to love their kids, but they love them as possessions and property and as badges. And they don't really, you know, they haven't really considered the risk they've put them in. And the, you know, outcomes they've sentenced them to in terms of, you know, how much time does the average parent think about how will my kid die? You know, what are the likelihoods? And especially if their kid is, you know, 20 or 30 years old, they can probably start guessing pretty realistically about certain behaviors and, you know, stuff that might happen. And, lots of negative outcome there. Lots of potential negative outcome that should be scaring a parent to death, frankly. So I guess I could make from an intelligence point of view, and I could make an intelligent argument that this is such an obvious sign of just how crass and selfish and stupid people are, is that they can pretend, okay, and have kids without even finding it. It's like being president of the United States, right? You would expect a person who's president of the United States to age, to frankly find it an arduous and difficult and unpleasant job, like almost the worst job in the world, because you are going to decide who lives and dies. You're going to kill people, okay? You're going to sacrifice them for the cause. You're going to make decisions that can't get undone and all that kind of crap, and they're really critically important. The welfare of millions of people are going to, you know, right in your hands. Who the hell does that and feels good about it? So, I mean, those kind of things are sort of obvious. Like, you know, we elect people who really seem better for the fun. You know, it was like it was a fun adventure being president. doesn't wait on them, you know. I mean, just think of all the potential for regret and all the real regret, because you're going to find out that, yeah, that decision was really shitty. Oh, that guy's dead because I made a bad decision. I mean, you know, that's, you know, who could do that and just walk away and pretend, I was president. Yeah, I mean, so I'm just saying, in the same, you could just make the same argument that people don't love their kids, because if they did, it would scare the fuck out of them. It would wear on them. It would be painful. Every day would be not easy, because they would understand that every single thing they do can matter. And it can matter a great deal. And that they can't afford to be self-indulgent, and they can't afford to worry about their comfort, and they can't afford to do all that kind of stuff. Because, frankly, it really matters what happens to this kid, because his future is dependent on you. Every step it takes could be a wrong step, and how could you feel comfortable about that? So I'm just saying, like, okay, maybe I could have felt comfortable when I was 20 years old, because maybe I hadn't thought about it a whole much. I mean, I already knew I didn't want kids. I knew there was lots of reasons not to have kids, and, you know, it's just dangerous. But I don't know if I was really ready to really appreciate just how dangerous and just how difficult it would have been for me. But the truth is, no, I'd already, frankly, I had done a portion of that, in the sense that, like I said, when I was 11 years old, I was already contemplating the question, you know, just because it had come up with, me and my father, like, how old do I have to be before I cut the grass, you know, that kind of thing, you know, when can I be given this obligation to be careful, you know, am I disciplined enough to know that you can't just be a stupid kid, you know, and you got to be more mature and all that kind of stuff, and you have to take responsibility and be careful and blah blah blah. Yeah, and it's, you know, I frankly was allowed to cut grass before I should have been, because frankly I wasn't all that careful and I wasn't all these things I should have been. So are you going to let your kid learn from experience? Are you going to let it hack its arm off, you know, to learn? Yeah. So, come on. It almost makes this whole conversation laughable to me, because, yeah, people are so far behind in terms of having the conversation, because they haven't even thought about this. They haven't even thought about their role as parents and the huge, gigantic, insane obligation it creates, and the terrorizing uncertainties. And the fact is, you know, they are sort of certain. There are levers that'll save your kid, and there's levers that'll destroy them. And there are little tiny signs on the levers. You know, you can figure out which ones will do what, but it takes a lot of work. You have to spend a lot of time trying to decode, you know, the ancient writing on the lever to figure out which one you're supposed to pull. But you can do it. And the question is, are you willing to do it? Are you willing to do all the work and all the, spend all the time thinking about all the permutations and all the likelihoods and unlikelihoods and blah, 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 and balancing and weighing all of this stuff? Are you willing to do all of that to come up with the right answer versus the wrong answer? And you can plainly see that people aren't willing to do any of that. You know, they'll give their kids to the school system. they'll just let some other system worry about it. You know, it was fate. They'll say something silly like that. it wasn't. You made it happen. You know, and then, you know, there's all kinds of ugly circumstances where, you know, you could end up raising your kid to be, you know, a menace, and he could, you know, go out with his friends and pick up some girls and then drive them into a tree, you know, and kill them all, you know, or paralyze them, even worse. for life. How are you going to feel about that for the rest of your life? You know, that's your great contribution to the world, is, you know, some paralyzed 13-year-olds. Whatever, you know. It just becomes how obviously disingenuous the counter arguments are, because there really isn't any good reason to have kids except selfish reasons, and there's only, you know, to say, I'll let ignorance be my guide. You know, it'll make me stronger. You know, the dumber I am, the better the parent I'll be, because, yeah, I won't worry about anything. That's a pretty bad defense of behavior. So, yeah. So I don't even want to, you know, just looking at those pictures, you know, it's just, it's sort of in between, you know. I mean, the picture when you're like 6, I guess, and the picture when you're 13 or whatever. Probably close to that. 11, 12, somewhere in there. Anyway, but the years that were really rough were, you know, 7, 8, 9. Those were really bad years for me. But no, I mean, 10, 11, 12 weren't too good either. So, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of bad years in there. A lot of hard, you know, trying to find any hope of me finding a place in the world that felt right, because it all felt so wrong. Just, I felt so alien. Just so, what planet am I on? Anyway, and yeah, I still feel it. You know, it hasn't gotten any better. You just get better at dealing with it. So that's it. So anyway, enough of that crap. The video. But this is, you know, I really do have to try to do this organization of the argument in terms of the levels it comes at. But that, yeah, the real irritating part is that people have been arguing about how dumb religion is for a long time, you know, and it was supposed to be dead, you know, 100, 150 years ago. The German philosophers, you know, assassinated God, and it's still there, and it's still, you know, because idiots, you know, that's the whole thing. It's idiots breeding idiots. And the people who aren't idiots really have to now and then say, oh, gee, we ought to discourage the idiots from breeding. We probably shouldn't be subsidizing it. We probably shouldn't be encouraging it, because, damn it, they're not doing the future a favor. But anyway, you can't even make that argument, which is sad. I mean, you can't even get people to, you know, recognize their obligation to say, yeah, it's probably not a good idea to let idiots breed more idiots. I mean, it's not a good plan. But anyway, at minimum, well, at least it should be intelligent people having an argument about what the future should be. The intelligent shouldn't have to argue with morons who are, you know, talking about what Jesus said. All right, anyway. So, till the next time, and such, so forth and whatnot. I think that's really enough. Yeah. Okay. I'll have to do. Working on it. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. So, till next time, and such. Try to stay out of trouble and whatnot. Really. It's the best policy. It really is. Don't make a mess, and you don't have to clean up a mess. All right. Till next time. Yeah, I'm going to leave. There, I left. All right. So, it's the end of the video. Really is. It is. I mean, it really is.